Welcome to Beauty as a Birthright, a podcast where we decode the evolving concept of beauty from a multidimensional lens. In this space, we embark on a journey with engaging guests from all walks of life to figure out if beauty is a birthright, then what's our legacy? So let's get started. Jennifer Norman is a Korean-American adoptee, single mom, and the founder and chief of human officer of the Human Beauty Movement, a certified B Corporation on a mission to instill every human with the beauty of self-love. She is a passionate person about diversity appreciation, humanitarianism, and inspiring others to be their most exceptional self. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Thank you so much, ladies. So great to be here in good company.
We'd like to kick off our shows by asking each of our guests, what is the most beautiful thing about you today?
The most beautiful thing about me today is that I am feeling so much abundant joy. I woke up this morning with a big smile on my face. It's a gorgeous day here in Los Angeles. And I just said, you know what? Today is going to be the best day ever. And I typically try to wake up like that. But this morning I went into a deep hour-long meditation and I just felt so soothed and calm. It really helps me to just shroud out everything that's going on in the world and really focus on self-regeneration and self-healing so that I then in turn will be able to help more on the outside to other people.
Nice. Do you have a meditation practice like every morning or?
I try to do it every morning. Sometimes it just whenever the impetus strikes, I might just sit it's like midday. Sometimes after lunch, I'll just get into a bit of calm, throw on my headphones, listen to some binaural beats and try to get into a meditative state. And I sometimes will do it to clear my mind completely and just try to empty out everything possible. And sometimes I think about guiding myself through a little bit of a journey, but more often nowadays, it's mostly to try to empty my mind because that's when I find most inspiration starts to hit, interestingly enough.
Yeah. When you have space.
Yeah. Getting into a good headspace.
You're inspiring me to feel so positive. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so fun and beautiful to wake up and be like, this is just going to be the best day ever. And the weather's great and things are lining up and the energy's good. So I love that we can have that energy as we start this episode with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And okay. So Jennifer, as you know, this podcast, you know, Tamsin and I have set out to decode this elusive concept of beauty and hear from others about how they define beauty, how they see it, their relationship to it, et cetera. So just starting off, I wanted to hear, both Tamsin and I want to hear how you view and relate to beauty, or how did you view and relate to beauty growing up as a Korean American adoptee?
Boy, is this a long road. It was quite a journey back to self, as it were, because in my early days, I would say that, you know, early on, I was a Korean American adoptee. My adoptive parents were both Caucasian. They had three of their own Caucasian children at the time. And then they went on the year after I was adopted, a couple of years after, they adopted my sister and brother from Vietnam. And so there were three of us that were Eastern Asian, three Caucasian. And so we really didn't think very much of it because my parents instilled in us at a very early age, you are American, so you speak English, like all traces of our previous heritage were completely eradicated. And it wasn't until I think that others started to treat me differently. And it was probably when I was in like middle school, like, you know, elementary school, middle school, where you start to get teased because you look different.
Did you grow up?
I grew up on Long Island in New York.
No way. Okay. I'm from New York. Oh, where in Long Island?
Smithtown, Long Island.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. On the North Shore. And so, you know, highly, highly Caucasian suburb of Long Island is where I grew up. Not very many Asian people at all. And not very much culture as far as, you know, Black people either. And so it wasn't until I started, you know, coming into, you know, my teens and whatnot, where I really started to feel like a misfit. I felt like I just like the things that I liked, the things that I felt, they just, and it's hard to express when you're young anyway, and figure out yourself when you're growing up and all that. And so a lot of times we're taking cues externally. We're looking to other people. We're looking to magazines. We're looking to, back then it was magazines. Now it's the internet. And we're looking to TV, and we're trying to find cues of what beauty is or what people view as what is beautiful. And it's very superficial. It's very on the outside, but it absolutely affects you internally, because you are, you know, internalizing the feeling like you're not beautiful. You're not good enough. You're kind of like, you know, second class. And so what I did was, I think that my tiger instinct started to come out, and I threw myself into all sorts of extracurricular activities. And so I was like, you know, the great student. I did ballet, I did tap, I did gymnastics, I did piano, I did art, I was on every school, you know, probably every school team. It was kind wow. of incredible.
You were overcompensating?
I was overcompensating. Yeah. It was complete a compensatory behavior, overachieving, mm-hmm. trying to get to this sense of worthiness and accomplishment and this feeling of success, or you know, that I can do these things despite what anybody thinks. And I started to get a little bit of a chip on my shoulder, a little bit of a rebellious streak, where I was like, oh, if somebody can do that, I can do that. I know I can do that. You know, and so I became extremely competitive, which propelled me in my career and some of my aspirations from that standpoint. But did it propel my happiness? Probably not. I felt like there was truly this emptiness inside me that was trying to be filled with activity and things and, you know, all of these, you know, accolades and whatnot. But it's very much a case in point from a psychological standpoint, that if you do not feel whole and self-confident and that self-love inside, no amount of money, no amount of things is going to help you achieve that. It's really all, it has to start from you really loving who you are and working from there. So many of us, you know, whether we're Korean American, whether we're adopted, whether we are just, you know, humans growing up, we all tend to do that. It's a very common behavior. And so what I learned much, much later in life, because, you know, once you get to a point of success, I think Jim Carrey said it best when he was like, I wish everybody could achieve this kind of success that you then you realize it's not the answer. You know, you go mm-hmm. through that only to recognize that, you know, just like the Wizard of Oz and Dorothy, you had it in you all along and you just didn't know it. And you were searching everywhere for what beauty is or for validation, but it really all comes and stems from you and your love and your confidence in yourself. And so that
So what happened at that transition? Like, what was that turning point that made you realize, like, this isn't what makes me happy?
Yeah, I will fast forward and talk about my son. Because when I had my son, I was working, I had a longstanding career in the beauty industry, was very successful. I'm feeling extremely burnt out, but still, you know, I had a son and I went back to work. And then when he was about 2 years old, he started to show signs of illness. And I was curious about what it was, and none of the doctors really knew what it was. And it turned out that he ended up moving from a place where he was hitting all milestones, extremely healthy, extremely smart, speaking, you know, like doing all sorts of wonderful things, to he started to lisp. He started to get these spastic movements in his body. He started to not want to walk. Then he started not wanting to crawl. Then he started not wanting to eat. And so desperately, we tried to figure out what happened. It turned into a crash where he almost didn't make it several times. His heart stopped and he was in Children's Hospital, Los Angeles, for a period of about 4 months, three of which he was probably in like a coma. And you know, was intubated, you know, on all sorts of life-saving measures. And honestly, you know, it was at that point where my husband at the time, we're no longer together, but we quit our jobs and we said, you know, whatever it takes, we are going to see what we can do to support life, because he deserves a chance to live and we'll find solutions. We know that eventually technology, medicine will catch up and we'll figure this out. He was diagnosed with a very rare disorder, which is called a mitochondrial disease. And what that is a global deficiency of energy in the body. And so what happens is when the body, let's call it at 2 years old, when it is, you know, you're going through these growth spurts, when you're all of a sudden starting to get cold, you're getting out into the world and in touch with other kids, you start compromising your body's ability to be able to support normal systems as well as overcome stress. And so he essentially crashed. He got to this point where he had so much stress on his body at 2 years old that it all of a sudden started to manifest, and it started to show up as him not being able to function properly. The long and short of it is that when he was in that situation, I think that most people that are faced with dire health crises in their lives, whether it be themselves or their children, it really shifts all sorts of priorities, doesn't it? It really creates a stopping ground where you really assess all the things that you've been doing in your world, all the things that had mattered to you, and recognize how so little all of that mattered. And what really does only matter is life and love and happiness and joy, like your family and everything that you have that has a heartbeat. Those are the things that really matter. And to me, even though he was in this situation completely like helpless, you know, for a long period of time, I saw so much beauty in his spirit, in that he wanted to live. He wanted to go through this. And I believe, like, a lot of kids come down, and I'm a very spiritual person these days, and I believe that there are these angels that come down in human form and teach us these valuable lessons and really bring out the heart and bring out the soul in us that really has the power to change and to heal. And so I really, at that moment, chose to eradicate everything that was important to me before and just focus on the things to me that really built my joy and that I found joy with. And lo and behold, he started to wake up. He started to get better. He started to do a number of things, but, you know, because his condition is progressive, he tends to have these relapses. But he was not expected, his diagnosis and his prognosis was that he wasn't going to make it past 3 years old. He just celebrated his 16th birthday. And so,
yay. You know, what's his name?
His name is Kyle Everett.
Kyle.
And you know, he has inspired in us so many lessons, not only to me about what real beauty is, having worked in the beauty industry all this time and thinking about the makeup, the hair, the skincare, the, you know, how I'm going to sell this, how, like all of those things, which, you know, are okay and fun, but it's not what real beauty is. It's almost like it's, you know, I flip it on its head. I say, like, beauty, you know, is something, it's an inside job. It starts from inside. And then once you feel real beauty, then go forth and manifest however that, you know, you wish. You know, if you want to change your hair, if you want to change your face, if you want to change your body, if you want to change your clothes, I mean, all of that is up to you if you feel that you are in true alignment with yourself. And that, to me, is what beauty is all about. It's that alignment, and it's that expression of love of self and then love of others.
Oh, I love this. That's incredible. I think this is like a good segue to talk more about what you do for work, because when we were researching you, I mean, you're like the epitome of multi-hyphen, which I love. And I'm so amazed by, I can see the connection with all the projects that you do, even though they're vastly different, right? So you mentioned that you've had this long career working in the beauty industry, and then you founded a lifestyle brand called the Human Beauty Movement, which really focuses on radical inclusivity, holistic wellness, and sustainability.
That's right.
And so I'm curious to know, what does radical inclusivity mean to you? And how does this play out in your brand, the Human Beauty Movement?
Yeah, you know, certainly my own experiences have definitely shaped what I'm hoping to see as far as an evolution of change in the world. And so, you know, the feeling of acceptance as a Korean American adoptee, like, I would never want anybody else to feel the way that I felt when I was young. And so if there are any words of wisdom or of a support or assurance that I can give to young people as they're growing up to help to enrich their own self-love journey and their own self-identity journey, then I want to be able to proffer that. Additionally, my experience with my son, you know, he lives on life support today. He is in a wheelchair. He's non-mobile, non-verbal, yet he is so strong and so powerful. We'll call him our little wizard. You know, he's like, you know, he's just like this incredible, you know, sensibility where, you know, he comes into a room and the room changes. You can feel hearts cracking open. And, you know, he elicits compassion. He elicits just this empathy and this love. And so for people to just judge people by what they look like or what they're capable of is really discounting their true power. And so the notion of radical inclusivity to me means that no matter who you are, you matter. You know, no matter what your age is, your race is, your abilities, who you love, what your, you know, where you came from, what you, you know, how wealthy or not wealthy you are. I mean, everybody has a story to tell. Everybody matters. And I want that to really be something that is spread so that we don't get to this place where we think, okay, these are exclusive places. Only XYZ people can go there or XYZ people can have this. I want it to be so that we really think about everyone and, you know, everything that we do and see what we can do to facilitate openness and acceptance and accessibility. I can't tell you.
I love that you have, you have this product with Braille on it.
Yeah.
Which I had never heard of, and I'm like, oh my God, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
I have a half of my family is deaf and hard of hearing. So that world is very important to me. And when I see things or companies or organizations be really inclusive of the deaf community, it's just like, you don't realize like deaf and hard of hearing people can actually hear music. They can experience music. And so when like music people include them in it, it's so, you know, it just shifts like my perception of what they do. And then when I saw that product with the Braille, I'm like, why don't these other products have this? It's so simple, right?
It is. And that's the thing. A lot of times, because businesses are really all about being, you know, we're in business to make money. And so there are a lot of things that we cut corners on and whatnot. I'm saying we as the collective society, not we myself, but I recognize that there are these special things that we can do to be mindful that may not necessarily break the bank, but they let people know that we're thinking of them and that we care and that we offer it because it is a service in order to help to potentially make anybody's lives easier. And the beauty of being an indie company is that and being self-funded, frankly, is that I'm able to do these sorts of things and prioritize inclusivity and prioritize accessibility. And I strive to do things from like the way that the website is built for, you know, ADA compliance and making sure that, you know, we're alt tagging everything to the Braille tags, which we offer on every single one of our skincare products. And we'll continue to do so, even knowing, you know, not everybody knows Braille, not everybody who is blind knows Braille. There are other avenues to be able to, you know, to find out what packages are. But for those that do know Braille and for those that maybe don't even have access to that kind of technology yet, you know, this is an option for them to let them be able to discern what their beauty products are in their bathrooms.
Mm-hmm. Wow, Jen, that is, I love that. And when I think of those people who previously did not have access to those types of products, and now there's something on the market for them, and how much it's like you watch those feel good videos of like a kid putting on glasses for the first time or hearing aid for the first time. And I'm kind of picturing that similarly for adults who, young adults or whoever they may be, that are using the products and able to feel and have that empowerment and that independence and knowing that they know exactly what they're going to be using. So that's really, really wonderful, Jen. And mm-hmm. I wanted to hear, so your involvement in the children book series, Super Captain Rave Man,
yes.
Is that just another extension of all of, you know, the things that you are putting forward in the world and trying to share with everyone, or can you talk more to our audience about your involvement in that?
Yes, I absolutely will. The Adventures of Super Captain Brave Man was an idea that we came up with, and it really stemmed from our experience with my son Kyle and taking him to the park and recognizing what a learning opportunity there is, or what a teaching opportunity there is to not only young kids, but also their parents about disability or about different kinds of whether it be physical or neurological differences. And so we decided to come out with this book series as a children's book series to be very easy to understand and to really offer these bonding moments for parents or teachers or medical practitioners, whomever, to share with children and really teach them at an early age about friendship, kindness, and diversity, so that we believe that once they do have this equipment with them, that they know, oh, that's a person in a wheelchair. Oh, that's a person with autism. That's a person who has Downs. They can recognize it. And it's not scary. It's not uncomfortable. They know that they can just go up and say hello and be friends. And there are certain things that they can do to really break down barriers and make everybody feel more welcome. And so we're about 5 books deep. I have them with me. They're right here. The Adventures of Super Captain Brave Man.
Do you write the stories and
yes, I write most of the stories. I have actually taken on a couple of other authors as well. So we're doing it as a team, but the same illustrator has been doing all of the books. His name is Victor Lodovico, and he's absolutely magnificent. And so the stories are essentially taking the character who is Kyle, that's based off of my son's character, in a wheelchair, and he goes through his day and he comes across kids and he recognizes, oh, you know, somebody's in a wheelchair, or, oh, you know, somebody has Down syndrome. He sleeps that night and he goes into a dream state. And so in his astral state, if you will, if in his dream state, he turns into his alter ego, which is Super Captain Brave Man. And he helps to teach kids lessons and, you know, do super things with kids. And then it all kind of comes around in full circle towards the ends of the books. I won't give them away because each one is definitely unique and special. But we are really, really excited that these have taken off as much as they have. It started as a side project, and it continues to be, you know, something that I'm extremely passionate about, because, again, about the whole notion of radical inclusivity and of really making it family friendly, of making it so that everybody can really, you know, from the start, get into a place of more kindness, more empathy, more love.
Special. I love that. I'm curious to know, how do you teach your son about his own beauty?
Yeah, I will say that there's nothing for me to teach him, because he already knows. I truly believe that. I feel that he knows his specialness. Yes, I mean, I can sense that, you know, he's a teenager now, and so he doesn't really like for me to coddle him as much as he used to when he was a youngster. I'm sure that he goes through the same things that a lot of teens do. But essentially, you know, he knows that he is surrounded by love. And I often think to myself, because, you know, a lot of people will look at him and their hearts will pour out and they'll feel like, oh my gosh, they feel almost sorry for my son and his situation. But I say to myself, and there was a point in time where I think that there was like this ravenous desire for me to try to find solutions and to try to find answers. And I was driving myself crazy, and I probably wasn't, you know, helping very much, because I was getting stressed out about it, until, you know, I think that it was almost like this angelic voice came to me and just said, you know, let it flow, let it be, he is how he is. And this is perfect. The way that he is perfect. And, you know, he has a job to do, just like we all do. We're here for a dharmic reason, and he's doing it. And so long as he is fulfilling his dharmic purpose, then he's going to be in this situation, and just let it be, the answers will come. And so once I was able to release that, you know, any sense of guilt, any sense of burden, any sense of, you know, of you know, dissonance in me, it was like a breath of fresh air. And immediately I feel like we were surrounded by so much even more joy and beauty in just knowing that we were together and that we have every moment, like every breath is a gift, every moment is a gift. And so let's just spend that time loving and being happy and making it as goofy and fun as we possibly can, because that's what life's about, you know. And so he's taught me much more about beauty than I can never teach him.
I love that.
Yeah, that was what that's what I was just gonna say. I was like, well, it sounds like he's really taught you about beauty. Is there more you want to share about that aspect specifically? I mean, I know we've been weaving it in and you've been sharing with us so generously about that process for you, but we'd love to continue to give you the opportunity if you wanted to speak more on that specifically with your own beauty and that relationship with Kyle.
Yeah, I would say that for me, there was definitely an opening up of spirituality, because during that period of time where I was struggling and striving, I think I you know, called just about every intuitive that I knew. I had him doing Reiki. I had him doing acupuncture 3 times a week. I had him do like all of these things, all of these modalities. We were, you know, doing healing from Eastern and Western. I explored CBD, and one of the reasons why I put CBD in my skincare products was because of the profound benefits that I noticed when I was looking at healing plant medicine. His being in my life has really taken me on this journey back to myself. And I feel that I've come to this place where, as I've opened myself up to recognizing that we are so much more than our physical beings, then I was able to release a lot of the anguish that I felt about looking in the mirror and just not liking what I see, or all of that drudgery that women and men tend to feel when, you know, the mirror doesn't show them what they necessarily want to see. And so, you know, after that, it really became much more affirming, where there was a lot more acceptance of my physical self, and a lot more focusing on the ability of loving myself enough to be able to give to other people. And I think that that's a critical thing to know too, because I think until we do that work and we give, and it's a wonderful thing to be able to give, but what happens is you start to end up getting burnt out and depleted because you're giving from an empty vessel. Yeah. And so that's, I believe, what was also happening, where, you know, for a period of time, I had to go on antidepressants. I had to, you know, really scale back on work because I was really just fried. I, you know, there were a lot of sleepless nights because, you know, I do his caretaking as well on the overnight. And so, you know, I'd wake up, and there were days where I would be crying myself to work. Like, I would literally be going off, and I was just so exhausted and depleted that I couldn't function properly. And so really recognizing that I didn't have to do it all from that place of feeling pressured from outside, you know, what the ego does, and feeling like, okay, well, if I don't do this, I'm not going to be as successful as I should be. There's that word should, right? You start judging yourself all those ways. And so recognizing that, you know, if I were to just release all of that and just focus on the here and now, what's right in front of me, and knowing that if I start from a place of loving myself and then give after that and not before, then it will always be regenerative. It will always be, you know, additive and cumulative, and will be able to best serve from there.
Regenerative is such a good word for it. Mm-hmm. Was there like a light bulb moment that you, because, you know, we all know these things, like, okay, I gotta take care of myself before I take care of other people. And we try and try and try, but it's so hard to prioritize ourselves. And I'm guessing, I'm not a mom, but like, I have a mom, right? So I've treated moms, and it just seems like mothers have a much more challenging time with this. So was there like a light bulb moment where you're like, you know what, I gotta really focus on myself before, in order for me to take care of the people that I love?
You know, a lot of times what happens is, just like me, it gets to where you hit rock bottom. you know, and hopefully we'll be able to show this message to people early enough that they won't have to hit rock bottom before they're able to figure this out for themselves. And so, yeah, I mean, there was crises after crises, whether it was, you know, my son going into the hospital, whether it was my second divorce, whether it was, you know, just like all of these things where, it eventually got to the place where it was like survival mode. And I would never want for anybody to get to that place. All unfortunately, you know, with depression and anxiety and those rates being what they are after COVID and continuing with mental health crises. I mean, this is the work. This is the work that we are here to do. This is where it matters most. And it's not that we need to fix ourselves or that we need to fix other people, is that we are really here to love ourselves and not think of it as fixing or that we have a problem or that we're broken. Because the more that we entrain ourselves with that kind of language, the more that we believe it. And so the more that we can, you know, think to ourselves, you know, this is a place where I need to just stop. I need to focus on myself. I need to quit. I need to, and it's okay. You have to understand that, you know, this is no place for ego. This is no place for worrying about what anybody else will think of you. It's really all about you and your relationship with you, because that is the most important thing. And so, yeah, there were probably a series of moments where I came to those critical places and those critical junctures, but then it's a practice. It's a daily practice over time of meditation, of making sure that you're eating the right foods, of making sure that you're getting your exercise and you're getting your sunlight and all of those little things that we tell ourselves that we should do. And then we ignore it. And then we're on our phones all day or we're on the computer all day. I mean, it's just recognizing, okay, what can I do every single day to get to a place of more healthy, nurturing habits that will get me to a place of more longevity and sustainability? And then that way I will be better able to serve other people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Those are great. I mean, those are great tips for our listeners too. All the things you named about getting outside, eating what makes you feel good and alive, getting your sleep, all of those things. The other thing that I noticed when I was browsing your Instagram was a series of portraits you took of other people with a mirror that you also have included in your line. Mm-hmm. And the way that you captured them capturing themselves in the mirror was really, I mean, I just loved it. I was like, wow, that is just, it's artistic and it's beautiful and it's just a cool opportunity. So what about mirror work for you? Is that something that you do regularly as well? Or was that really pivotal for you as a tool during this process?
It's interesting because the idea of mirror work, a lot of people think it's narcissism, you know, when you go and you're staring at yourself in the mirror, and certainly there could be that. It's like, oh, you know, I'm just doting on myself and I love myself and I love the way that I look. And that's grand and that's fine for what it is. But more often than not, we stare at ourselves in the mirror and we're judging ourselves and we don't like what we're seeing and we're nitpicking and we're like the smallest little thing, a hair out of place, a freckle, a wrinkle, a puffy eye, is it like we start to micro analyze everything that's wrong about us, especially as we're getting older. It's just a common thing because because it's like dermopsychology, we start thinking, oh my gosh, there's something wrong with me. I look sick. I look unwell. I look unrested. And so can we use the mirror as more of our friend? Can we flip the script? Can we say to ourselves that I am beautiful the way that I am, with no makeup, with like frazzy hair, just what, you know, got out of bed, because I'm alive and I'm vibrant and I have air to breathe. And so, you know, doing those things that are focusing, where you can like stare at yourself in the mirror and do some breath work. Sometimes it's also good to do it with a partner. You know, like putting the mirror aside, just staring and doing eye gazing is a very powerful practice, right? It's uncomfortable and it's awkward at first, but it's
super, you know, vulnerable.
Yeah, you feel so vulnerable. Or if you're standing in front of a full length mirror and trying to find what you like about yourself, it's not so easy. But doing it helps to continue the positive reinforcement of messages back to yourself. Putting sticky notes or you know, writing in sharp, like some people use a dry erase marker on the mirror that we sell, it says, "Hello, beautiful human." It's inscribed right there on the actual mirror. And so, yeah, I did that as just like a fun little experiment. I went to Desert Hearts Festival and I brought the mirror with me and I went around and I started taking videos of people staring at themselves in the mirror because it's unexpected. But then when they see the inscription that says, "Hello, beautiful human," it all of a sudden makes them smile and it just brings a little bit of joy into their lives. And so that's what I want to encourage, is like, well, you know, helping the mirror to be our friend and to continually do that work of self-reflection, pun intended, of, you know, really reinforcing all the positives.
I love that. We had a guest, I think it was Amrit's episode, Paige. So Amrit Singh is a beauty wellness acupuncturist based in Canada. And we were talking about how it's so normal to talk down about ourselves, but it's not normalized to like hype ourselves up and like, you know, share with the world, like all the things that we love about ourselves, but it's so normal to like show up and say like, "Oh, I hate this about myself, hate that about myself." Mm-hmm. So I can really see how this mirror work can really change your perception and how it is. It's different than narcissism. You know, it's like you're creating, cultivating empathy for yourself as you do this work. And in narcissism, there is no empathy.
Right? Yeah. And that's one thing, because we start to judge ourselves, "Oh, I don't want to be a narcissist." Well, erase all that, you know, just don't even think about that. Think about how you are helping to contribute to making yourself larger, how you're, you know, because when you say, "Oh, I don't like this," like you're shrinking yourself and you're making yourself small.
Yeah.
If you can help it to elevate and expand your power and your greatness and all of the wonderful gifts and talents that you have to share with the world, rather than being scared to do it because you think you don't look right or that you're afraid to because of how somebody else is going to perceive you, like tell yourself that you are worth it, to believe that you deserve it. And, you know, good things will come. I often like to tell this amusing story from back in my early days when I worked at L'Oreal. There was a young starlet who we had signed for a hair color brand that I had just launched called Feria. It's still around today. But this starlet, when she was getting her hair and makeup done, would just stare into the mirror and say, "Superstar, superstar. Super
love it."
And we were like, "Oh dear Jesus, like what the," like we thought something was wrong. We were like, this person is insane. Like we were just like, "Oh my God," like everybody judging.
As oh my God, I would be next to her as like, staring at myself saying, "Normally, superstar.
But do you know who that young starlet was?
It was you're gonna tell us?
It was Jennifer Lopez.
Oh my God. Yes. J-Lo.
Yeah. And so I tell that story because if you think about like just starting out and all of the naysayers and all the and how hard it is to survive in the entertainment field, let alone as, you know, a Latina woman, you know, all of the things, but she was able to persist because she had that confidence and she believed in herself. And it takes a lot of chutzpah to get past all of that and the rejection after rejection and the naysayers and all that. And you can't do that unless you have a good, strong sense of self. Everything that we perceive is a self-reflection. You know, it's like, you know, if you know, I can go out in the world and be like, "The world is amazing. It is gorgeous." Or I could be like, "Oh, the world sucks." And both times I will be right. You know, it's just really however, you know, whatever's going inside you and how that bounces off of you and how you're energetically vibrating at that moment could either rub you the right way or the wrong way. And so it's, you know, it's interesting for that person to do the investigating. A lot of people will start weighing in and investigate themselves. And then, you know, it becomes this cycle of, you know, non-productivity, certainly. That's what a lot of the news these days is. But I think, you know, it really is an individual by individual thing. It's like, focus on yourself before you focus on other people. And then you'll be spending energy much more wisely than
yes.
others.
So Jen, you kind of touched upon aging in the previous question. Yeah. And so obviously for people who aren't watching this on YouTube, Jen looks fabulous. And you have a very youthful spirit though, too, that really shines out. And this essence of whatever youthfulness is, like I see it as, because of Chinese medicine, when I see older people that have this youthful spirit, it really reminds me of the fire element, which is very much the element that children have. It's this like curiosity about the world, this like charm, this like wonder, and it's so magnetic and we're drawn to it. And so I'm curious to know, as someone who has the privilege of appearing physically youthful, right? How have you been navigating ageism and getting older?
Yeah, you know, and thank you for what I will call a compliment. I'll be 52 next month. Mm-hmm. And so I will say that I've always looked younger than my age, which had been what I would perceive as a detriment earlier in my career, because, you know, going out for that job and looking like you're 12, it was like or, you know, going to that big sales meeting and you know, getting up and giving a presentation, I perceived that people weren't taking me seriously, or were just brushing me off to a certain degree, in some of the circles that I had been in. And so I'd always try to mask my age by appearing older. And so I'd cut my hair short. I'd try to appear very professional. I would, and carry the suit, the briefcase around, and then that wasn't me. And so what I had recognized is it's best for me to just be me. And it took me a very long time to get to that place. And I know that there's always this, okay, in this situation, you need to be more professional. And I am a bit of a shapeshifter. I know that, like, if I'm in a certain situation that, you know, dressing a certain way is a good thing, you know, because it's like, it helps other people to feel more comfortable and not let the conversation just dwell on what I'm wearing or, you know, that sort of thing. But the best thing that you can be is you. And so as far as ageism goes, what I'm finding it now is that, you know, now that I am much older, it's like, gosh, the young kids these days, I'm like, they are amazing. And so I'm like, I'm guilty of it too, because I'm like, they are so quick. They're so smart. They're so, you know, agile in terms of their ability. Where yes, the attention span is much different now than it was before, but I'm guilty too. I think that it's almost like, you know, the adaptability. I've always felt myself keen on the idea that adaptability is longevity. It goes with human nature. It goes with natural science as well. It's like the ones that are better able to adapt will be able to stand the test of time. And so the nice thing about age or being my age now is it almost doesn't matter. I feel like it's a lot less of a concern that it was before, where if somebody were to go out into a new job at the age of 51 years old, they'd be like, oh, you know, forget it. They're over the hill. They're dinosaur, you know, like those kinds of things. But then I think that so long as, you know, a person is true to themselves and loves what they're doing, then the concept of ageism, like a lot of things in society, is starting to melt away. You know, people are living a whole lot longer. And if Elon Musk has his way, we will never die. So, you know, age is almost becoming irrelevant. Plus, you know, with, you know, the cosmetic surgery industry being the way that it is, I mean, there's a lot of people that I would never be able to guess their age, you know, older or younger. And it almost doesn't matter. It really does matter about that spirit that you have and the interesting thing with me and in my particular family is we like to keep things light. We like to keep things fun and engaging. We're big Disney fans. We're big Marvel fans. We just geek out over like things like that too. So, you know, we keep it fun and we keep it entertaining from that particular aspect. And so if we call that a youthful spirit, then okay. If not, I just call it, you know, having a good time.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly helping. It's certainly a type of a youth serum, definitely. So speaking of, you know, if Elon has his way and we're going to live forever, but then if we really don't, Tamsin and I are so curious to hear what your beauty legacy is, what you are choosing to leave behind. And the funny thing is, when we get to this question, I already feel like I'm like, oh, I could tell them what they're going to say. And then people will surprise me and I'll be like, oh, that was different than what I thought. So no pressure for your answer, but what will your beauty legacy be? You have so many to choose from, but tell us.
Yeah. Honestly, I think of myself as a vessel for a message. Like I'm not really as concerned about what my legacy is that I'm leaving behind, more so than the work that I'm choosing to do right now in this very moment. And I'm sure that will evolve, because everything evolves so dramatically. Like, who can really perceive what the world is going to be like in 10 years, 20 years? It could be dramatically different. But what I will say is that I want to be able to create a culture that is more loving, that people feel that they can continue on the path of self-love and self-acceptance in a safe way, and that we help to, you know, open up the doors for more people to have a seat at the table, you know, regardless of any of the isms that we tend to face these days. I would love to see, you know, ourselves as society breaking down those barriers and really coming to a place of just, you know, we are all in this human soup together, and let's just have a good time.
I love a human soup. It's like alphabet soup for us. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Jen. It was so incredible to hear your story and just like witness your spirit. And it's so palpable. And well, we're going to have all of your information in our show notes, but please tell our listeners where they can find you and how they can support your work.
Oh, thank you so much, Tamsin and Paige. Yes, the Human Beauty Movement, Humanist Beauty, and Super Captain Brave Man, you can easily find by Googling those keywords. You can easily find us on Instagram, Facebook, even TikTok. We're on TikTok, yes. Pinterest, you name it. We're pretty much everywhere, but Googling or just going to those websites are the best way forward. And we do have a community, which is called the Human Beauty Movement Community, which I do encourage everybody to sign up for. We have these wonderful free offerings of meditations, guided breath work, journaling sessions, and there are also some really high value paid ones too that are happening, and more are coming on, you know, with every month. So definitely check us out.
Thank you so much, Jen.
Well, that's it for today. If you like this episode, please give us a 5-star rating, subscribe, and share it with your friends. You can follow us on Instagram at @beautyasabirthright and say hello. If you're interested in learning more about Taoist face reading, head over to elementalarchetypes.com and follow Dr. Tamsin on Instagram at @elementalarchetypes. If you like to explore beauty through your own hands, you can visit yangface.com. You may also explore Paige's Instagram at yang.face for tutorials, Chinese medicine theory, and candid thoughts on cultural appreciation.